Peter Unjin, welcome back to Sunday Night at the TSO.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Great to see you. It's been a while.
It has, yes, thanks to the pandemic and various other things.
Yeah. Well, Toronto looks forward to welcoming you back again very, very soon. And you're coming to town for the program. Unjin conducts The Planets, and we'll talk about that headline work by Holst in a moment. But starting that program is Rossini's Gazzaladro Overture. I wanted to chat with you a bit about this because, you know, Rossini wrote so many operas and therefore so many opera overtures, but there's just a few, this being one of them, that really stand out and keep being performed. What is it about this one that makes it so popular?
Something just irresistible about it. I mean, it has everything in it. It has those famous Rossini accelerandos, which are always so exciting to witness. But it also has a kind of delicacy and wit and tension in it that not all the overtures have. And it also starts with these wonderful side drum rolls, these snare drum rolls, which we use two, so they come from either side of the stage. So it has a lot of drama. I mean, the great thing about Rossini, of course, is that he was very inefficient. And so he would write a complete opera, and then on the morning of like the dress rehearsal, he would still not have written an overture. So the story goes that they would lock him up in some kind of a room upstairs. And if after 30 minutes he hadn't written a page of the overture and thrown it down, they would throw him down because they were so anxious about having the overture. So these things were written at the very last second, right before the premiere of the opera. But it's absolutely brilliant because it uses all the material from the opera. So it's pretty easy for a great composer like that to put it together.
Well, we'll get to now the main feature of this program, which is Holst the Planets. And this is a work that you have gotten to know very well with the orchestra. It's part of your recording legacy with the TSO. And it is a most prominent aspect of the legacy of Gustav Holst. What is it about this work that continues to hold our interest?
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? Because there aren't that many pieces by Holst that we listen to all the time. He's kind of a famous composer just because of this piece. You know, it's seven movements. It's an incredible journey, actually. And it has such extremes of drama in it that I think it's absolutely irresistible. I mean, starting with Mars, it's also the imagery, I think, you know, this idea that each of these symbols, these gods, could be represented so beautifully in music, I think fascinates people. Sometimes, of course, you go to performances and they show pictures of planets as if he was interested in astronomy, which he wasn't. But that's okay. Whatever, you know, excites people is fine. I love the journey from, you know, from the very beginning. Mars, this the bringer of war, this the incredible high drama of the sound of the orchestra in that tremendous tension, and then you go straight to Venus, the bringer of peace, and it's just completely the opposite. And you know, you move through all of these different moods, but you're also moving through a kind of evolutionary process where you start with the most primitive elements of man. You know, this idea of being at war or being at peace, and then Mercury, the use of the mind, the, you know, the creative side of things, and then Jupiter, this idea of loyalty and friendship, and the kind of prime of life, and then you get to Saturn, which is the bringer of old age, and then Uranus, which is, to me, it's a little bit like the devilish idea. So the last two, Uranus and Neptune, as being sort of the afterworld, in one case, Uranus, the god of the sky. It's a kind of a vision of the afterworld, maybe even the underworld in a way. There's something very evil about it. And then Neptune and the bringing in of the chorus is clearly an image of heaven. And it's just magnificent to experience.
It is. I have sat through a performance with you in the TSO of that work in the past, and it is so incredible to get to that ending and these haunting voices from off stage. How is it coordinating all of that?
You have to pray a little bit that it's going to go well because you can't see them. And usually you have somebody else conducting them off stage, and you have to get the sound just right. They have to be audible without being too present. If they're not audible enough, it's kind of frustrating for the audience because they don't get a sense of that message coming from afar. And then the other thing about it, of course, is that it's very difficult for intonation. It's in many, many parts. And there's the parts where they sing a cappella for a while, and then the orchestra comes back in. One dreads that the choir is going to lose its pitch a little bit, and then when the orchestra comes back in, it's going to sound horrendous. So that's another aspect of it that's always a little bit nerve-wracking. And then the final thing is, at the end, they have to disappear. They have to keep singing, and to the point where you can't even tell if they've stopped. Whether was that the last one? Are they still singing? I'm not sure, because there's this wonderful kind of element of disappearance, the ultimate of aspect of evolution, actually. So yeah, it's a very dramatic experience.
And as you mentioned, you know, Holst was not interested in astronomy. It was astrology that was his thing. He knew a lot about it. So I have to ask, what sign are you, Peter?
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not really. It's funny because I grew up thinking I was Capricorn because my birthday is December 21st. Don't worry, everybody, you don't have to send me a birthday card. But it's December 21st. And when I was young, I swear that that was the beginning of Capricorn. And then sometime when I was about 12 years old, I started, you know, not that I follow these things very much, I became a Sagittarian. So I don't know how that happened. But so I think I'm a Sagittarius, but I'm definitely on the cusp.
Well, so then that leaves me, you know, Sagittarius ruled by Jupiter, which, you know, is depicted very nicely by Holst, or Capricorn ruled by Saturn. Which movement do you resonate more with?
I think, you know, both equally, actually. It's funny you mentioned that. But I mean, Jupiter obviously has this unbelievable tune in the middle of it, which is, I mean, it doesn't matter how many times I conduct it, I still find myself very moved. Because, you know, I grew up in England. I mean, I was born in Toronto, but from the age of 5 to 19, I grew up. Those are really formative years. So, like, for example, now I find it really astonishing that people are going to have to sing God Save the Gracious King. You know, that's just astonishing to me because that's so much part of my youth to refer to the Queen. But Jupiter has my heart. Saturn maybe has my mind.
Also on this program, Mendelssohn's concert piece, and that's going to feature two soloists from within the orchestra, the newly minted principal clarinet, Eric Abramovitz, and his seatmate, Miles Jakes. Tell us a bit about this one.
Yeah, this is great because I think Eric is probably my last hire. I'm not even sure if I actually hired him in that position. I think I hired him in associate principal. Anyway, and Miles only a couple of years before that. So, yeah, it's always lovely to have members of the orchestra. That's like my family, right? So at the front of the stage. And this piece is extremely entertaining. It's not very long, but very, very entertaining. And I think people are going to totally love it.
Well, and I can just imagine those two are a riot. So I imagine it will be quite a lot of fun, extra fun.
Absolutely.
Closing the first half of the program is music by Samuel Coleridge Taylor. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this ballad for orchestra written, I think, about 1898. It's really a brilliant piece and wonderful melodies. Apparently, it was commissioned at the request of Elgar. There's a lovely quote, actually, from Elgar that I think is worth hearing. He says, "I am sorry I am too busy to do this, to write this piece. I wish you would ask Coleridge Taylor to do it. He still wants recognition, and he is far and away the cleverest fellow going amongst the young men." That's just so British, isn't it? Though so English of Elgar to say that. I love that quote. Coleridge Taylor actually lived in London and lived very, very close to where I grew up. I grew up in a little town called Purley, and he was in Croydon, of course, not at the same time, but really a brilliant composer, actually. And the piece is fabulous. And it's really nice because you have, you know, Rossini, Mendelssohn, and then this kind of brilliant showpiece for orchestra to end the first half. It's still quite a compact first half. And then, you know, the epic planets in the second half.
Then on November 13th, the orchestra heads up to North York to the George Weston Recital Hall for a performance of Mozart's Jupiter Symphony. I like the tie-in with the planets there, although, of course, Jupiter is not Mozart's name. That came later, but such a fantastic work. You must be looking forward to that one.
Always a great joy to conduct that because, you know, we did a lot of Mozart festivals, so we played a lot of Mozart together over the years. And I mean, not that we didn't play Mozart at other times as well. And I think the orchestra has an absolutely beautiful approach to Mozart, a kind of very classical approach brought into the 21st century. So it has plenty of life and vehemence in it. And the piece is magical, however you look at it. And, you know, it's one of the most optimistic experiences one can possibly have.
Sounds great. Well, looking forward to a very rich week with you, Peter. Thank you for joining us.
Great pleasure.